What's up, everybody? It's your host, Bonnie Eyes Mercado with Real Talk with Eyes, and I have the author of the book, My Last Breath. This is going to be a very interesting show when you guys hear about everything that this guy has been through. This is Matthew Duvall. So introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Matthew Duvall. I'm the guy who's died twice and came back, and I've also founded the International Suicide Prevention Charity to assist survivors of suicide. And one thing I've told you before the show, that one thing the viewers or the listeners today will not be is bored.
Yes, no. Like I was telling you too, I don't think anybody gets bored on this show. We always have something to talk about. We always flip it around. But tell me about that. That's pretty crazy. And then he's showing me pictures too, and I'm laughing.
Yeah, I'm just showing her a picture of me cleaning up a suicide scene. Believe it or not, that's what I do in my spare time.
Wow.
For families that don't have insurance or
that's great
or money. And
so tell us about this. Okay, so you're an author of a book, My Last Breath.
Right.
So tell us about that.
If you want to check out the website while we're talking, you can do that.
He's already promoting. I'll give you plenty of time to promote, I swear, but
well,
you can do it.
They can go to mylastbreath.com.
Okay.
And that's the book website. So as what happened was I come from a just middle class, lower income family. That's my background. And at the age of 12, I mean, we had no religious background whatsoever.
You just believe in God, that's it?
No, we didn't.
Nothing?
We were just like, you know, growing up.
It was like, okay, we're just living life.
Didn't go to church or anything, so, you know, it was pretty open.
Okay.
And at the age of 12, I was at a friend's house across the street from our place, and they had a pool. We didn't, so we were over there a lot, and it was summertime. And
they were your best friends.
Right, they were. And we're screwing around, grab-assing, and I was trying to impress some girls by swimming the full length of the pool and coming up and going to scare them.
Isn't that how it always happens?
I didn't swim well. I sucked at it. And halfway across, I'm thinking, well, I need some air. And
I
decide, well, you know, pride and ego kicked in. I said, well, I got to keep going.
I could do it. These girls are looking. I can't look like a punk and go
back. Right. So I go up and by the time I get there, I'm like, I need some air. I don't care about scaring them or looking good at this point. And my friends were hanging, you know, by their arms on the side of the pool, and I came up under them, and they pushed me back down. I didn't get to the surface.
So they
pushed
me to
the bottom. I went all the way to the bottom, and I clawed my way back up because the terror kicked in at that point. And just as I get back to where almost to the surface again, they push me back down again. And they're not trying to drown me.
No, I was going to say that's dangerous to
do. We're
12. Because you need air.
Right.
But you don't know that when you're 12.
Yeah, so I'm like, I just want to make sure that people know they weren't trying to drown me. So I don't want any legal action.
So we're not trying to kill them, okay, for the record.
So I slide back down to the bottom of the pool, and I literally am at the drain. It's a oval-shaped pool, and it's got a kidney shape, so it's round, and there's no square surfaces. So I get to the bottom, and I'm at the drain. And I realized I can't get to the surface before I needed a breath of air.
Wow.
And, I mean, the terror of drowning is something.
That's one of my worst fears.
Yeah, I don't like swimming since this
I could imagine. I was going to say, did you get some lessons after that? You just like, screw
it. I
can't
stay out of the water
me.
As much as possible unless
put
it's really
in.
Hot. Yeah, if it's really hot, I'll get in.
Do a little dip.
Yeah, I stay in the shallow end.
Or you sit on the stairs?
Up to my ankles. Well, I get to... So I decide, well, I have to breathe. So the instant that I take a breath of water into my lungs, I'm engulfed by a white light. And it's I go from sheer terror to instant peace, instantly. And I went from a prone position where I'm face down to a looking up at 45-degree angle going up into this light.
And
it's like I've traveled across the universe because I look beside me and it's like stars are kind of flying by, and this light coming at me is literally it's streaming particles. It's and they're actually permeating me. I could see them going into my body. It's like adding to me. It's kind of a weird thing. And I notice I'm floating too. I'm not standing on anything, but I'm going up into this light, and I have a review, life review. I'm 12, so it's not that long.
Yeah.
But I have this life review go where I'm in New York and I'm twirling. It's summertime and and I'm looking up at the clouds, and I'm like 5 years old, and there's butterflies, and it's like hyper 3D high def, you know, you can see and sense everything. It's just, you know, real peaceful. And but that was one of the things. Another was I was eating a fried bologna sandwich. My mother used to make them. If we were good, you know, went to the store, we were good, she'd make them for me. So
that was your treat.
I'm sitting there eating that and just tasting all the flavors. And so I keep going to the light, and I come, and there's like 12 individuals blocking my path. And wow. And I'm like, well, this is trippy. And I can't see because they're silhouetted, so I don't know who they are. And out of the center, this one individual comes, and he comes up to me, and I realize who it is. And I said, well, that's Jesus. That's Jesus Christ. I'm like freaked out, you know.
This is crazy.
But I mean, he's got blue eyes, long hair, white robe. I mean, it's just like, whoa. I mean, it's really vivid and clear, and I didn't want to look away from just a beautiful creature. I knew it was God. I just knew. And he comes to me, and he grabs me by the arm, and he tells me, you got to go back.
You're not ready to go yet.
It's not. You have work to do. He told me very explicitly, you have work to do. Mm-hmm. And as I'm starting to mouth no, I mean, he didn't verbally say it. He said it to me without moving his lips.
Yeah, you could tell.
Telepathy. And as I'm saying no, all of a sudden water starts coming out of my mouth. I'm on the side of the pool laying on my back, and my friends had realized after 10 minutes that I wasn't faking and that actually something was
come
wrong.
Come on, I'm smacking you.
Yeah, real bright friends. But they pull me up and they resuscitate me, and I'm, I was like being reborn, literally, because I could feel every hair on my body, I could feel the sun on me. And instantly this rage came over me that I've never felt before. It was just, I was just so pissed off. I didn't even know why, but it was because I had to come back here. And I just got up and ran away, ran back home. And I didn't speak for 2 days. I was so mad.
Wow. You wanted to go into the light.
Yeah, I did.
You're like, that looks better. I want to eat my bologna sandwiches.
I wish
and
that
get
I could
back.
Feel that good again. I really did.
Wow.
I mean, it's the thing I aspire to, is to get into that light again. It's that good. And nobody deserves to go into that light. It's that good.
Wow, that's so interesting.
And then, you know, I was instantly emotionally and spiritually emancipated, and I could see the world for what it was. So then you
believed in God.
Yeah.
You have a religion?
I didn't know if I believed in him or religion. I just knew who he was. And at the age of 15, I went to a Billy Graham revival, and I said, he's all I have to do is believe. And I'm like, oh, well, I met him, so yeah, I guess I could buy this, you know? And so at that time, I became a believer, and then I bought into this myth, basically, that you, as a Christian, you could do whatever you wanted to do, and you're once saved, always saved, is what the myth is that I try to bust. You know, it's like, if you're saved, you got to live a life. You don't just go out and start acting like an idiot like I did. Because I unfortunately had a problem coping with the way the world was at that time. Because I had,
at 15 or at 12?
From 12 on. And
okay.
At 15, I discovered alcohol. And it made me so I didn't care about what was going on in the world. And I decided, hey, this is cool.
This is fun.
Get drunk, and I actually fit in, and I was partying. And by the time 25...
Peer pressure.
It wasn't peer pressure. It was
just fitting in.
It was not being able to accept the way the world was. You know, I saw how mean people were to each other, and I developed a $1,000 a week drug habit by the time I was 25, from 15 to 25, where I was working for the Hell's Angels. I don't know if I should say working for Hell's Angels. I was an associate Hell's Angels. I don't look like a Hell's Angels type, right?
No.
I mean,
the innocent ones,
yes.
Though. You look innocent. You got to watch out for you.
Yeah, so I worked for them in a roundabout way, and doing things so I could earn the money to pay for my cocaine habit that I had at the time, which was a popular
So how did it drug. Start? It went from alcohol to, did you smoke?
It's a gateway drug. So. It was, yeah. I went from alcohol to pot to everything, and then cocaine I really liked because I didn't like getting drunk, so I'd do cocaine so I could maintain, because I was a blackout drinker.
So more of like an upper, not so much a downer.
And then I found the pipe, which was, they call it crack, but it was basing back then.
I was going to say, I you mentioned something about New York. That's where I grew up. Because there is a difference between crack and base. I know in New York, they always say that. So when you said that, that's right. Okay.
And so I
yes, people, there's a difference.
Yes. So I started, you know, when I actually quit, I learned about crack, and I'm like, what's crack? And they go, oh, that's just pre-done. I go, well, I don't trust anybody doing that, you know. I want to know what I'm smoking here, not, you know.
Or make it yourself.
Yes.
So I. You know it's bad, but at least if you make it yourself, you know what you're doing.
So it really took me down quickly, smoking it over a year period. And I decided that I wanted to go back to the white light. It just seemed like an obvious solution. I'm saved, so I'll just kill myself and go back.
Maybe it was like you got numb from that feeling. You wanted that feeling. But we'll be right back because here we go chatting away. We'll be right back.
How are you? My name is Claudia, and I'm the general manager at IHOP 1619. The address is 5170 Southport Apache between Russell and Tropicana. And I'm here to invite you for the free pancake day that we're going to have on Tuesday, February 24, from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. We can't wait to see you there.
Hello, and my name is Anthony Middleton. I'm the general manager of IHOP 1608 on 1401 South Decatur Boulevard. And I'd also like to take the time to invite you down for National Pancake Day on February 24th for a free short stack of pancakes. See you there.
Hi, this is Paul, the Career Czar, and I'm here with
Coach Christine.
Listen to the Career Czar on alltalkradio.net/careerczar or live at 10 a.m. Friday Pacific Time. The Career Czar and Coach Christine are here for you. We want you to find the career that you want, that you always were made to do. We're also going to be having many exciting guests talking about careers, talking about life in general and life balance, talking about hobbies, because all work and no play makes Jack or Jane a dull boy or girl. So, Paul, the Career Czar, and
Coach Christine
on alltalkradio.net/careerczar or live, 10 a.m. Pacific Time. At www.alltalkradio.net. This is the Career Czar, all career, all the time.
Did you hear, Matt? I'm addicted to crack.
Really, Miracle? And that's a good thing?
Oh, no, not crackhead crack, like crack my back crack, like the great tune-up I got from Dr. John Florendo.
Dr. John Florendo? Well, he's the only doctor that actually took time to listen and diagnose my pinched nerve properly.
And you know, his staff is awesome. They treat you just like family.
For real chiropractic, call 702-920-6556.
Or visit their website at www.johnflorendo.com. That's JohnFlorendo.com. And get your own crack fix.
You put your keys between your knuckles. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. You lock the door behind you, maybe twice. Now you feel safe. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not eating right, if you're not active, or if you smoke, you're putting yourself at risk for disease. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
What's up, everybody? We're back. Real Talk with Eyes with Matthew DeVelle, and he's the author of My Last Breath. And I swear he was saying that this show is going to be interesting, and it really is, because I have so many things to say, and I'm sure all the listeners, too, were listening to this. I mean, it's really amazing. Like, I mean, I had a near-death experience myself. It wasn't so intense as that, but it's just kind of crazy. And then to hear what you went through, like you were talking about, you know, you've done drugs and things like that. And so I guess that's where we left off. So I guess you were... I'm like, where did we leave off? We talked about so many things.
Well, where we left off was that I had developed a $1,000 a week cocaine habit that didn't include my drinking, which, you know, because you go out to bars at that time, it would be $50. I mean, a night, you could easily drink that much. So, and then you go out after, where I was at was in Alaska at the time. And it was, the bars closed at 2. So you had to go to after hour places afterwards and party and drink or whatever. But anyways, it got to be work to stay loaded. So I decided that, you know,
just 24 hours a day,
right,
you did it? You didn't really sleep.
It was just horrible. It was a horrible existence. I ran out of steam, just could not do it anymore. But I had to, because I was addicted. So, like I said, I attempted suicide, which I went out to this bird sanctuary outside of Anchorage, Alaska, and I took a fifth of gin and three bottles of sleeping pills and started taking
called
them.
Called it a night.
And wrote a note saying, you know, I'm just going to go on to the next thing, you know, whatever's going to happen, it's going to happen. And halfway through the bottle, a flash of light comes over me. And I'm looking up at the sky. I went from in my car, and I'm looking up at the sky.
And then you're taking more pills. You're like, here it comes again. I want this.
So this was not a good type of high. It was, I mean, I've had highs. I've taken ass. I mean, I've taken it all. And this was nothing like that.
Yeah.
It was, because people say, well, you're high, and, you know, you just had some kind of a hallucination or something. And,
well, you knew it wasn't that.
This was definitely not a hallucination.
That was the difference.
I mean, this was a life-changing event that took place. As I said, I'm looking up at the sky, and it was blue, horizon, a few minutes ago, and now it's cloudy.
And this was in Alaska?
Yeah, and it's cloudy from horizon, and I have, like, my hands cupped over my ears. That's what it sounds like. There's no sound travel. It's all of a sudden, things have changed. And I look down, and I'm actually out in the middle of this bird sanctuary, up to my waist in the water, and I'm stuck in the mud up to my ankles.
Wow.
And I'm like trying to figure out how the heck did I get out here, first of all, because I wouldn't have done this.
I was going to say that would freak you out because
right.
of water.
Right. So I look around to see how the path, where the path was that I came out here, and there wasn't one. There was no footprints out to where I was at. So that I was like, what the heck? And I finally turned around and noticed how far I was. I was a couple hundred yards away from the car out in the middle of the sanctuary.
Wow.
So I decided, I finally got my legs unstuck, and I decided to make it back to the car, try to focus on getting back versus how I got out here. And as I finally realized where I was at, and then another flash came over me, and I'm on a road looking down at my feet and trying to figure out why my legs are not working. And I realized that it was probably the sleeping pills and the gin had
made you numb.
So I wasn't able to walk very good. And my pants were wet. And I'm trying to figure out how my pants got wet. And then I realized I had just been out there.
You didn't pee in your pants.
No. Well, I did later, but I didn't do it at that point.
Not at that point. Not yet.
So I'm looking down the road, and this is the road to Seward. It was Friday night, or Friday evening, basically, around 5. So in Alaska, in the summertime, the sun's up almost 24 hours.
I know, that's crazy. I actually want to go visit Alaska.
So I'm looking down the road, and there's a fog bank covering the road, so I can't see about 500 yards down each way, which was weird.
You know? It's like a horror movie.
Yeah, so it was. And there's no cars. There's no cars. I mean, this is a well-traveled road on a Friday night in Alaska, because everybody bails and goes down fishing for king salmon. It's just everyone does it. So this road's just nonstop traffic. And I'm trying to figure out what the heck's going on. And all of a sudden, believe it or not, a yellow New York taxi cab pulls up next to me. And it's just all rusted, and it's looking crappy. And the windows are all smeared. You can't see through them. Everything's kind of blurry.
That's kind of how it is in New York.
Yeah. Normal cab. But
that's a normal cab.
To be in Alaska is
yeah, that's
a weird
little
thing.
Odd.
And the window's down on the passenger side, and this grotesque-looking, heavy-set, sweaty, greasy, very disturbing-looking character is driving, and he doesn't even look at me. He just asks if I wanted a ride in a real gruffy voice. And I just needed to rest. I just wanted to sit down.
Yeah.
I was like, the sleeping pills, I was thinking, I just need to sleep. So I open the back, get in. You can't even see through the partition. It just looks like somebody took their hands all over the window. It's really kind of like a horror movie.
Yeah.
And I just think, and he takes off, and I just think, well, I'll close my eyes for a second and get a nap here. And the moment that I close my eyes, another flash, and I'm in a free fall into a pit.
I love that ride.
Yeah, this is not one. It's like, this is where the survival instinct kicks in, and I'm like, I think when I hit the bottom, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And it's pitch
That's
black.
That's scary. That's like those dreams. I hate those dreams. And you fall, it's like, oh,
yeah.
And you wake up,
you
jump.
You think, I'm going to die.
It's one of those flashes. Oh,
but
man.
I'm
like
thinking,
those.
Well, I was just trying to kill myself. This is kind of ironic, you know, now I'm afraid I'm going to die. So I'm falling into this pit, and I went through a blackness that you can't describe. It was so black that it's a void, basically, is what I went through. And I, when I got to the bottom, it's hard to describe what happened, and it's hard to put it into words, because what I'm going to describe is basically like pretend you're blind, and I'm trying to describe a color to you.
Okay.
I mean, it's really hard to describe what took place in this. Hell is what it was.
I was just going to say, see, when you were 12, it was heaven.
Right.
You did all that bad stuff,
yep.
Now you're going to hell.
Yep. And I, like I said, I was saved, and I thought, you know, I could do all this stuff I was doing for the Hells Angels and other bad people and drug dealers and all this stuff, and I thought, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It does. It does matter. What we do here on Earth matters. So I'm at the bottom of this pit, and when I come out over this huge cavern, I am split into seven. You know, like seven of me are split out and cast out over this pit. And I'm able to comprehend each of me simultaneously.
It's supposed to be the sins, right?
I'm not sure.
I would think. I'm just seven, I'm like, greed.
Well, this is just a witness thing. I'm not like trying to describe this is what happens to you when you go there. I'm just saying this is what happened to me.
It happened to you, of course.
And
everybody could be different.
Right. So two of me, I'm living experiences where I'd caused people emotional trauma from my past. Like this is very disturbing.
Wow.
Because I'm on the ground. It's a clayish material. It's like a tennis court, basically a clay tennis court. It's hot. It's humid. It's very the atmosphere is dense. It's extremely. You feel heavy, constantly tired. And time progression. There's a time progression there. I was there for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like pillars of smoke, steam coming out of the ground that kind of are like partitions. And so I can't see very far. And every now and then, I would say it's a demon masquerading as somebody that I had harmed in my past would come out. And they would have you ever see that show Lie to Me? It's a new show. It's about reading facial expressions. They have a wall where people are their facial expression, they capture it, and they show, you know, this is anger, this is greed, this is disgust. Well, their faces would be froze like that. Like my aunt, she comes to me, and she's frozen in this face that's indescribable. And she comes to me, and I relive when I was five, where I'd taken a little trinket off of a shelf of hers. You know, I'm five.
You knew you're not supposed to touch.
Oh, I'm five. I mean, come on, give me a break.
I know, 5 years old.
And I didn't think anything of it. And well, I got to relive her for the next 2 days, tearing her house apart because it was the last thing her husband had given her before he died. I mean, it makes me cry to even think about these things.
Yeah.
You know, and she's passed on now, but I mean, I'm reliving these emotional, traumatic things that I've done in my past. I mean, very, very bad. I cry when I can't even get into the real serious stuff.
I know, he has tears right now. You're going to start making me cry. We're going to all start crying here.
So, and then two of me, I'm living in the present, and two, I'm living in the future, where my suicide, the pain I'd caused my family and friends, I got to experience that firsthand. And then the seventh, well, one of me, basically, I'm on my face, weeping for God to get me out of here.
Wow. Well, this is getting emotional, so we're going to take a short break anyway. We'll be right back.
The First Amendment reads, "The people shall not be deprived or abridged of their right to speak."
The odds are, the person you just heard is an African American.
Because African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans.
That's twice as likely a stroke could rob you of the freedom to speak your mind.
The freedom to shout from mountaintops.
The freedom to tell your mother you love her.
And it's twice as likely a stroke could take your life.
Therefore, it's twice as crucial for us to do something about preventing a stroke.
Learn how you can help beat the odds.
Start by calling 1-888-4-STROKE or go online to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, Jack, you got a sec?
Yeah, sure, come on in.
Yeah, I was wondering if you... Jack, your hair's on fire.
Yeah, I know. I just need to finish this sales report, and then I'll probably, I don't know, let me lie down for a bit. But I'm sure it'll go away.
But the flames are getting bigger. Shouldn't I... Your hair, there's so much fire.
No, I'll be fine. What can I help you with? Oh, dear. Well, at least we know the sprinkler system works.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
What's up, everybody? It's your host, Bonnie Ice Mercado, and I'm here with Matt Dovell, the Matthew. Author of My Last Breath. And we got to laugh now because that was pretty emotional.
Yeah.
You guys were listening. He got it pretty emotional. But, I mean, it is emotional. This is real, people. This isn't TV. We're talking about real life.
Yeah, God's good. Give me a break.
But I would think of all these experiences, obviously this last one that happened to you, I mean, now you're doing good things.
Right.
So apparently, and I do believe everything happens for a reason.
Right.
So, I mean, you were 12, you did the whole heaven thing.
Right.
But I guess you still had to experience, you know, drugs, have fun, whatever.
Right.
Until this happened, you hit rock bottom, and then I guess that's what made you change your life.
Right. Well, Jennifer, the...
No, Bonnie.
Bonnie? I thought it was Jennifer.
No, that's my publicist's name.
Oh. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's all good. Bonnie. Don't worry about it.
I was, I got sidetracked now. Okay, back onto the story. What happened was, so I'm reliving these experiences. I won't go too much into it because I'll start crying again.
Yeah,
basically.
We don't want you to cry.
No, so.
It's a happy show.
I get delivered out of this place slowly because I get drawn up into the one where I'm on my face weeping to save me. I mean, I'm literally weeping. I didn't even know what weeping was until I was doing it.
Wow.
And, I mean, the tears are streaming down my face. I couldn't stop. And I get pulled up out of this place and drawn up into that one of me. And I'm told again, hey, you got work to do. And this time he was very explicit. You can't do it.
You don't do it this time. This is where you're going, buddy. Not that white light anymore.
If you're doing drugs or drinking, it doesn't count, basically. You have to be straight.
And wow.
And then he showed me what forever was in hell. And that was, I can't even describe
that
what forever
scared you
is.
Straight.
Cause forever here, we don't have a concept of what forever is. People say, I love you forever. No one really knows what forever is here, but I've shown what forever is, at least in hell. It's not a good thing. So I go back through a void again, this blackness that I can't describe. And slowly I start hearing off in the distance, somebody yelling at me. And it's my roommate. And he's screaming my name because I guess he had found my note. And somehow I ended up from the place where I attempted suicide back 12 miles away. And there was no way I could drive. I couldn't even stand up.
Wow.
So I ended up at this place in this bed. And he's yelling at me because he found this note. And they had spent the night looking for me.
He's freaking out.
Yeah. So, he's not happy. And I mean, it was...
I'd kill you and then revive you.
Yeah, so So I come to, and I have to go to the bathroom, and I had to literally crawl into the bathroom because my don't take sleeping pills and gin because
I don't even like
it causes nerve.
I don't even like what is it, the Vicodin? Yeah. Like when I have my wisdom teeth, it just makes you feel like, I don't like feeling all like ugh.
Yeah,
I don't
bad.
Like that feeling.
But what it did was it caused nerve damage, where I was unable to control my muscle movements. It was a very strange phenomenon that took place. So I recommend, first of all, don't kill yourself.
Yeah, don't kill yourself, people.
And don't do it that
way. You've got a lot to live.
Right. Yes. So
you're going to do it real quick.
So I'm like sitting there, and I can see basically steam coming through the walls of the house. And I literally call the fire department because I think it's the house is on fire. And I have seven firemen standing around me, and they're looking at me like I'm totally insane. And I realized they can't see this, you know. And I'm looking at it, and I can see it coming out. And I'm like half here, half there,
wow,
type thing still. And I realized that I had just survived this and where I really was. And at that point, I told them that I had I must have had a cigarette lit or something.
Yeah.
May have this story. So yeah, they would stop looking at me that way, you know. And they
do not need to go to mental asylum.
Yes. And I was seeing things probably for another 5 or 6 years that was half here, half there.
Wow.
Like apparitions and demons.
But didn't you say you did acid too? This was an acid.
Actually, I only took acid one time.
Okay. This
was But this was when I was younger. Yeah. When I was 18, acid actually was more pleasant than this. I mean, I took mushrooms, yeah, and all that stuff, and it was nothing like this. This is like, I have empathy for schizophrenics. You know, they say, hey, I see things going on, or people are talking.
Yeah.
Who's to say they're not? You know, who's to say they're not seeing things that we can't see?
It's true. I believe that too.
Because I feel like half time, I'm half here, half there, and it's always a warning to me. It's like, hey, you know, where are you at? You know, get a reality check here. But from the day I came to, I went and turned myself into a psych ward because I was like, hey, I just tried to kill myself. And
yeah.
And I, you know, told on myself, and they told me.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Okay. I kind of cut out there for a second. Making sure I'm still here.
You're still here. See what I mean? Yeah. You're half here, half there. No, you're here.
So
you've been here the whole time.
I literally was scared straight. I haven't had a drug or a drop of alcohol in almost 22 years now since that incident. And I've dedicated my life to assisting surviving family members of suicides and people who are suicidal. I have a healing gift too that I don't talk about much, but I can go into these trauma scenes where people are like, you know, there's still the aftermath and the people are pretty freaked out, and I have a calming effect that I bring in. And I help the people heal and grieve through a process that I can't explain, but I'm gifted at it. So
no, I understand that.
And it's, I have churches, they use me to come in, almost like an exorcist, but not in that way. You know, I don't go in.
You're a healer.
I don't go exorcise a house or anything. But
demons away.
I go in and I assist the family to process what's happened. Over the 20 years, I found out that people who clean up a suicide scene of a family member are 75% more likely to commit suicide later on. 75%, that's pretty high.
That is a high percentage.
And no group is focusing on this fact. And the only way you can focus on that is to clean up the scene for them. Otherwise, they have to do it because it's a...
I didn't know that. I thought the paramedics or the cops or...
No, everyone. That's an urban myth that there's a
men
in black group that comes in.
That could torment them because, I mean, like, I could take blood and it wouldn't matter to me, but some
right.
people that just, wow.
Well, you really don't want
Especially
to.
Especially somebody you know.
A national crime scene company contacted me, and they actually donate to us. It's kind of odd, but we're supposed to be paying them to clean up scenes, but
yeah.
we don't have any money. I mean, we're broke.
Yeah,
we're overwhelmed with need, basically, because we have 50 suicides a day that need to be cleaned up.
I was going to say the percentage of suicides.
50 a day need to be cleaned up.
That's crazy.
That's really high, and when you're talking a biohazard company, that's $1,500 a whack. $1,500. So that, I mean, when you 50 times 1,500 is
that's
significant.
Costly.
So we have volunteers that go out for $25. They can get the basic things to clean a scene for a family because we don't want to double traumatize the family. That's our goal. We don't want to have them experience this because if you clean up blood of somebody that you don't know, you're not affiliated or associated.
Yeah, it's not so
it's
close.
It's not a subconscious or a social thing. You're not drawn into the items still left in the house.
Emotional.
That, I mean, they were alive just a few hours ago, and you could see the last things they were doing.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
They're alive. They were alive.
But you're just coming in it like,
right.
I don't know this person. I just want to help
this
person.
Well, even the trauma scene people that do it for a living, they only usually last 2 years because it's too traumatizing even for somebody who does it for a living.
Really? Yeah, so they only do it for 2 years?
Right, because then they become like post-traumatic syndrome. They start...
Well, I guess it is. I guess I would actually want to help. I know it sounds crazy, but like I've already... Like if there's car accidents on the side or I've seen my friend's drunk drive and hit a tree and like I grab some of them out of the car. And everybody's like, what's wrong with this girl? To me, I just always think about the life. Or I guess I don't think about the blood or all the crazy stuff.
Well, most people... They can see that, but they don't. The hazards associated with it are what is what you have to be educated on. Because I would just go run in, clean up. I wouldn't even care. And then they train me. They train me to be certified in biohazard. This company for free.
All right. Well, we're gonna take another short break. We'll be right back.
You're invited to tune in to the show that everybody's talking about. Every Saturday at 7 a.m., please join me, Tabiti, for the Empowerment Hour. The Empowerment Hour uses humor, spirituality, common sense, and ancient wisdom in a way that's unavailable anywhere else, and it's guaranteed to provoke an upward shift in your perception and transform your life for the better. This way, you are better prepared for the what next in your life. If you need a boost in how you're feeling or if you simply want your batteries recharged, then please be sure to tune in to the Empowerment Hour every Saturday at 7 a.m. here at alltalkradio.net.
Hi, how are you? My name is Claudia and I'm the general manager at IHOP 1619. The address is 5170 Southport Apache between Russell and Tropicana. And I'm here to invite you for the free pancake day that we're going to have on Tuesday, February 24th from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Well, we can't wait to see you there.
Hello, and my name is Anthony Middleton. I'm the general manager of IHOP 1608 on 1401 South Decatur Boulevard. And I'd also like to take the time to invite you down for National Pancake Day on February 24th for a free short stack of pancakes. See you there.
What's up, everybody? It's your host, Bonnie Eyes Mercado, and here with the lovely Matthew DeVell, which is making everybody, I hope, that's listening not do drugs or stay away from bad stuff because his experiences are pretty crazy. And he is also the author of My Last Breath.
Right. And like I said, you can go to mylastbreath.com, learn more about, because I mean, literally, I could talk about what happened for hours. And,
but really, if you read the book, you can get,
you can get a good grip on what happened.
Book.
So I recommend, you know, I'm not trying to be an advocate of the book because I just did that as a record, basically. I documented.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, because that's like when you have a dream. They say to document your dreams,
right.
Otherwise they go away. So,
right.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, the, I didn't really have a choice with the book, that's another story. But anyways,
that's the next show.
I wrote the book, and it's like things started happening at that point. This was in 2003, and even though I'd been doing the work, it was really way under the radar. And at that point, I suddenly got put in to interviews with congressmen and senators because they were doing the suicide prevention bill, and they were for the nation, basically, a $92 million budget they were trying to pass, and they had me interview them on the radio.
Wow.
And so at that time, then the Pentagon called me, and I did work with the troops in Fort Benning and been to Fort Wainwright in Alaska, working with school districts, and, you know, that we have a serious issue with suicide now in our country. But the CDC is 3 years behind in reporting. They're the ones who report statistics, and they only report every 3 years. So right now we're skyrocketing. I mean, wow. We're way off the map.
So it keeps going up?
The right, because of the, well, there's a lot of things.
Well, the economy. I could see a lot of people coming.
Well, there's two reasons people commit suicide, and that's finance and romance.
That's true.
And I tell you what, your finance goes, you're going to have a romance problem. And, you know, and right now, you got Valentine's Day coming up, and
that's why there's a 99 cent store, people. You can still buy a nice heart, some chocolate.
Right. Hey, they have good stuff there. I shop there all the time.
I love the 99 cent store. I'm a big fan of that place.
Yeah, you can find really good things. They even have organic food there, believe it or not.
So. And I always tell people to, you know, a holiday is a holiday. If you don't have money right now, you know what? Get a little something. You can get a card. People, don't even tell me you can't get a card.
Right.
Or like I said, a little bit of candy.
They have like $10 cards there for a buck.
Yeah.
I don't know why they end up there, but they do.
I don't know that either. But you know, I did hear that what happens is in the stores, they overstock things, and that's how stuff comes to the 99 cent store. Yes, I had to do my research.
Okay.
And Big Lots too.
And
that's another one.
The near-death experience stuff is I do a specialized work with the military. It's called VSS, but I can't tell you what it is. I'd have to kill you if I told you what it was.
I don't want
to
die
it's
yet.
Classified. So,
but
the other thing I do is it's I don't know if you remember Tony Robbins. You ever hear him? He used to be real big in the 80s. Get you over your fears type thing. Well, he worked really intensely with this thing called NLP, and it's neuro-linguistic programming. And I ran into a guy here in town. His name was Stephen Jenkins. Brilliant. I mean, he studied this stuff for years, and we got in talking about it, and I was thinking, well, how am I going to apply this to what I do? And then he was talking about hypnotic therapy. And I was having these people call relentless, like 2-3 times a day, same people over and over again, calling me, talk for hours, and I'd talk about suicide, and then they'd call back, you know, and they're like murder suicide, and they want to kill their wife, then they want to kill them, and they had a plan and everything. And typically, you know, your focus is where you're going to go in life. Whatever you're focused on is what you're going to have happen. You focus on your house being lost, you're going to lose your house. Focus on maybe you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose your job. So you got to focus on what you want in life. If you want something, you got to focus on it and stay positive as much as possible and write down what it is you want in life.
No, that's true. My mom tells me all the time.
It is
when
true.
You think negative things happen. You think positive, positive thing happens. That's why you stay around positive people too.
It is. It's I have people write down that are prone to depression. They write down 45 things that make life worth living for.
Yeah, there's like a couple friends I have. I don't really talk to them that much because every time I talk to them, it's like depressing.
Right.
I'm like, dude, okay, life is not that bad. Like, do this, stop.
Yeah, it is not that bad because I've been there. I go to these trauma scenes. I know what's bad.
Yeah.
I know what's bad. And it's.
I know. Everybody always thinks their life is bad, but then think of somebody else or talk to somebody else, and you'll see your life is not as bad.
It's true.
There's always somebody worse off than you.
So if you write this list down, if the guys are out there, listen to this. You know, you write down like things about your girlfriend or your wife, and you have them at the top of the list. You say, first time we kissed or whatever, and you keep it secret. Don't let her see it. And, you know, and every now and then whip it out and scribble something on there. And she'll be so curious. She'll kill you to get to this list to see what it is, and then she'll love you when she sees she's on the list. But 45 is it's the name of the list, so don't get all freaked out if you don't have 45 things.
That's just what you name it.
Yeah. If you have 5 things on the list that you think, you know, like a vacation or a pet, something you love and when you think about it, it makes you feel good, ice cream, whatever. As long as you have something on the list, thinking when you're in a state of depression or a downtime, you pull this list out and you relive the moment. Close your eyes, relive the moment. You smell it, you see it, you hear it, and it will release dopamine into your brain. It's a natural narcotic.
Yeah. I have heard of that.
It's more powerful than heroin.
I've known a lot of people that have.
It is.
Speaking of heroin.
And it will instantly take you out of a depression. And you can make these lists for your friends, too, as well. Like, you know what makes them happy.
Yeah.
So you have on there the list, and when you talk to them, you say, oh, remember that time we went on the vacation? Remember that movie? You know, whatever makes them happy. And you could literally make them start laughing before you're done talking with them. But they'll be talking to you all the time at that point from, you know, they won't leave you alone.
That's the problem. I'm like that. I'm kind of like a healer. That's what I've heard. And, like, I can talk somebody out of something, or I can talk people into something they don't know. But I'm just saying, like, I feel that. It's like a lot of my friends that do, it's like they call me, and I'm like, oh, my God, I don't want to be on the phone for 5 hours about this. Like, it's this simple. We can do this. And then they start repeating it. It's the same thing over and over again, and you're trying to just be nice.
Right.
So it's like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
If you're listening right now, please have – you know, if you're worried about this year, make a plan.
Make a list.
Make a plan for this year. Have something to look forward to.
Yeah, the economy's not going to be that bad for so long.
Right.
I do believe we're going to get out of this. I mean, gas prices are going up. That sucks.
Right.
Everything's going up, but it's still, and people need to save, too. People need to learn to save.
You know, the president's job, I don't want to bash the president, you know, because I think he's overcome some insurmountable odds to get elected. But I wish he would stop talking about how bad things are, because he is the leader.
I agree.
And he
I
needs
agree.
To say, you know what, I see a vision
see this,
of how
this
the future
gonna
is going to be, and it's going to be good.
Yes, that's just on the news. Can we stop talking about negative? I get so depressed, I don't even watch the news anymore.
Right. So,
it's like, can we ever talk about what's positive around the world?
As a leader, we need to have somebody saying, you know what, I see a vision. Things are going to look good. It's bad now.
Exactly.
It is bad now. I admit that. But it's going
to
be
but
better.
This is what we're going to do to fix it.
This is temporary. That's what suicide is. Suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Mm-hmm.
So right now people see that
and that's
this
a cop-out, too.
It is.
Like, not saying anything bad about you because you almost attempted it, but
it
is. It's a cop-out.
Right.
It's like you can't deal with what's going on.
Well, for my situation, it was like I knew that my ego and pride was so great that I was unwilling to accept that I didn't have the answers to my problems.
Wow.
So.
All right. Well, again, we'll be right back after this little break.
Put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
The state of Nevada continually ranks as one of the top places to do business in the world. Why? Because Nevada offers one of the most favorable business climates and has no corporate income tax. Isn't it time you considered a Nevada corporation for your business? Isn't it time you considered SMG Incorporated? Let SMG Incorporated assist you in setting up your new Nevada corporation, allowing you to take advantage of the best that Nevada has to offer. Nevada offers maximum flexibility, maximum privacy, and a minimum of regulation and red tape. SMG Incorporated works with you to determine which corporate structure delivers the most direct benefits to you, allowing you to keep more of your money and protecting your valuable assets. This is why you need to call SMG today at 702-733-2727. That's 702-733-2727. Or call toll-free at 1-800-666-6250. SMG Incorporated, delivering Nevada's business climate directly to you.
What's up, everybody? It is your host, Bonnie Eyes Mercado, and I am with Matt Duvall, or Matthew Duvall. I don't know what you like being called better, so that's why.
Matthew.
Okay.
It's kind of...
More professional, just, Matthew.
Well, it's deeper than that, but it would take another hour.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want you to make sure you get to promote everything.
Right.
Because we're at the end of the show.
Well,
we could talk forever.
The nonprofit, we really need assistance right now, so... go to our website, supportisp.org. That's supportisp.org. It's International Suicide Prevention. We're based out of Las Vegas. We go out and clean suicide scenes. We're trauma scene, you know, experts. We go out and go to the scenes where people have killed themselves, assist the family. I go to funerals. I hang out with the family. I don't just go to the actual trauma and help clean it up. I actually hang out with them as long as they want me to. They usually don't want me hanging out too long because then they start associating me with the loss of somebody.
So yeah, exactly.
At that time, they're like done with me. But you got to understand, a lot of people say things to people before they kill themselves that they're ashamed they said. And that guilt can cause
them.
Yes,
it's like, oh, I didn't get to say I loved him, or I got in a fight with him before it happened.
Or they said, go kill yourself. And then
they kill themselves.
And how can they tell somebody
and it's not your fault.
In their family
yeah.
that they said, go kill yourself?
Yeah.
So I kind of am like this emotional lightning rod that they can come and they can share that with. And
that's awesome.
I don't care. I mean, I've heard it all. I really have. So there's really nothing.
There's really nothing they can say.
I mean, they're like...
And apparently you've seen it all, too.
Oh, yeah. But every now and then I see something new, which is... disturbing. So I do want to thank you for having me on your show.
It was a pleasure. Definitely. I'd love to have you on again, maybe even a longer show. We can really get into more
absolutely,
things.
Absolutely, because I have a lot of things I want to talk about to help people that are having emotional problems, that having problems getting through this crisis we're in right now that's temporary.
Yes, temporary. I agree.
This is a temporary situation we're going through, and we're gonna come through it, and everything's going to be fine. It's a matter of not giving up.
Thinking positive.
Thinking positive and staying around people who are positive. Very important.
And save.
Yes.
And this is the time to save, not
And you can
crazy.
Talk to me personally. If you want to talk to me, go to my website. There's contact information on there. You can talk to me. And I'm always willing to meet with people and sit down and listen to them. Most people just want to be heard.
That is true.
Yeah,
a lot of people do
that.
Want to just be heard. But thank you so much. It was great having you on the show. My Last Breath is book. Check it out. Matt Duvall, he's the bomb. I'm Bonnie Eyes Mercado. Bonnie Mercado. Google me. You know how to find me. I love you all. Tune in next Tuesday, 11 o'clock to 12. Bye.
AllTalkRadio.net.